if I'm 15, 16, and I know that I like working with my hands, but I don't know what trade, and I really don't know who to go to, what kind of advice would you give someone at that age that kind of knows that they want to work with their hands, but they don't know what to do or where to go?
Kind of two schools of thought. I would take a look at and see what your school district offers. If there is a program, get into a shop, a welding, a woodworking, a auto mechanic. Get something where you're doing something with tools that maybe you can work around with and try it out with. And then two, I would look around your family friend circles. Who do you know? Is it your best friend's dad that's a plumber? Is it your mom's friend that's a HVAC tech? And see if you can kind of hang around and see what they do. If they're tackling a project on a weekend and you're close enough, maybe go out and help them out. Or in the summertime, take an internship, go out and try something out, helping out a family member, and see if there's something you enjoy. Because so many times people get into the trades, they go, oh my gosh, this is so much fun. And the spark is lit and off they go.
Any clue how important blue collar workers are? If we didn't have awesome blue collar workers, our lives would cease to exist. This is the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades Podcast. Debunking myths and shining a spotlight on the unsung heroes of our economy. We'll talk about everything from plumbing and electrical work to welding and beyond. Because let's face it, these are the backbone of our infrastructure. We'll talk about the skilled trades gap and uncover the countless benefits of pursuing a path in the trades. This is the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades Podcast. And now your host, a passionate advocate for the trades, this is Andrew Brown.
Today we welcome Eric Gurson, who is a certified kitchen designer with nearly 25 years of experience. He's managed home builders, design firms, custom cabinet shops, and has been involved in thousands of projects. Eric is also the host and executive producer of Around the House Northwest, a popular home improvement show on Fox 12 Plus in Portland, Oregon. In addition to his TV work, Eric hosts a nationally syndicated radio show, Around the House with Eric G, where he shares remodeling and construction tips with homeowners and tradespeople. He's a national speaker and has been recognized as a top 50 innovator by Kitchen and Bath Design News. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thanks, brother. I'm looking forward to this. This is going to be a lot of fun.
I know you're a kitchen designer, so I want to share with you a little story. We bought a house from 1958, and we're only the second owners of the house. And the one thing that stuck out to us is the kitchen. Was from 1983, and it was bright green. Everything was green. Even the 40-year-old Sub-Zero was green with all the panels on it. I said to my wife, don't worry, we're going to redesign it because she loves to cook, and she loves to actually be cooking and be with the kids in the living room together. But the way the kitchen was designed was just a box. And it took about 7 years before we redesigned that kitchen, but it changed the whole dynamic of the kitchen. Do you feel that too when you design a kitchen, that it just changes the whole dynamic of the house?
Yeah, traditionally, especially here in the United States, it's that cultural center of the home. It's where people eat, they congregate. And when you're having a party, nobody's out in the living room. They're hanging out in the kitchen where you're making food and everybody gets piled around in there. So yeah, it's not surprising that that really can change how that house is looked at. And you just think about it. Think about it as this is a functional room, right? What did we have for stores in 1983 and the products you put in that kitchen versus 2024? It's a complete different aspect of how you use that space.
Yeah. And just by taking down a wall, opened up the entire space that now my wife can watch TV with the kids in the living room and kind of be within that space and feel connected because she felt completely disconnected. So it changed everything in the house.
Now you think about it though, when that house was built in 58, right? That kitchen was like the laundry room. It was something that the guests didn't really go in and see. It was a very functional space like a garage was. So it was never meant to have the social aspects we have today.
And you talk about character. It had the wrong character because it was, people were like, whoa, wow. I guess green has come back in. And look, everybody's got their own style. But a lot of times when you buy a home, you're buying someone else's vision. It is not necessarily your vision. But I feel that's one of the most or the biggest bang for the buck. When you redesign your kitchen, you're getting extreme value in the home and it brings the value of the home up.
It's the one thing, though, you can't overspend on kitchens, but just fixing that kitchen is such a big deal. And it's probably one of the most expensive remodels you're going to do anyway within the inside of the house. So if you get that knocked out, even for resale, you might not get every dime back, but it's going to sell quicker because if everybody's out looking at, you know, let's say your house value is $700,000, and I'll just pick a random number. If you're cruising around looking at $700,000 houses and you go, wow, that one's got a beautiful brand new kitchen, it's going to sell quicker.
It definitely is. How do you, when you design a kitchen, when you look at a kitchen, the before and after, because to me, I look at them, it's hard for me to visualize it. But when you look at it very differently. So how does that work for you to get that design just right for the homeowner?
Just because I've been doing it for almost 30 years now, I can walk into a space and go, ding, this is how I would do it. Rarely is it something that I sit there and have to really plan out a lot, but that's just a concept. Really, what I have to do then is find out what that client's needs, wants, desires are within that space, because maybe what I think would be a good option doesn't fit their lifestyle or how they're going to use it. So, you know, there's some people that want to be closed off that don't like the great room aspect where I'd go, oh, let's blow this out and open this up. And they're like, no, I want to stay in my space and cook and limit the amount of people in there. And I want the kids out. I don't want to watch Sesame Street. I want to be in there watching my cooking shows.
Everybody's got their own, you know, design and what they sort of envision in the house. Are you seeing certain, when it comes to appliances, do you get into the aspect of what type of appliances or name brands to put into the kitchen?
There's been a lot of change in appliances over the last probably 5 to 10 years. Brands that weren't reliable are, and brands that were reliable aren't. And so there's some really big brands out there that people go out and buy. And then I go, oh, sorry, you bought that. And they go, what do you mean? I'm like, buy the extended warranty. You'll need it. And the thing that you see now with style is, and then you put in smart home tech on top of that. You really, when you design a kitchen now, need to stick with one or two brands, because when you jump into this, maybe the range hood is going to talk to the cooktop now, you know, or the refrigerator's talking to the dishwasher. So you really kind of have to stay within their ecosystem for these things to work correctly together. You can't put in four different brands of appliances without having four different apps, and there's nothing more frustrating than that.
But it is a little overwhelming because there's so many different options out there. We looked at all the different options. We ended up actually going with Thermador. They had a special of some sort where you get a free dishwasher. It just worked out in that way. But it's been great so far. But yeah, everything is connected via Wi-Fi. And it screams at me when I leave the refrigerator door open. I get that warning. And my wife gets the warning too. She said, why is the fridge open?
Oh yeah, I have that with door locks. I have that. My wife and I have a door lock right now that's sending off error codes like that, that it's connected, disconnected. I don't know what's going on with that. Can't figure it out. I'm going to have to probably replace it. We joke about it all day because we'll get 5 or 6 warnings on our smart home app going, disconnected, connected, disconnected, connected. It's frustrating when things don't go perfectly.
Yeah, especially when it disconnects from the Wi-Fi. That's always fun too, to reconnect everything.
That's the trouble. But, you know, things are getting smarter. Things are getting better. And I think, you know, when it comes into integrating stuff, I think we're getting smarter on what's a smart home app supposed to do and what are the features you want. I don't want my rice cooker to give me the weather. I really don't care.
Yeah, all these different devices give sometimes too much information that you don't need. Everybody has a home improvement show that they maybe have grown up with. For me, it's always been This Old House. And I remember watching Bob Vila and I remember watching him go around into different homes and watching him and speaking to Norm and the other characters on the show. But it got me really interested in home renovation. What show really kind of inspired you in your journey?
It was exactly the same. This Old House, first season that aired, which I think was season 2 nationally. I was probably 7 or 8 years old. And my dad actually got a hold of the station in Boston and ordered the plans for the project so I could watch along with the plans. I think that's where my design aspect of looking at the world through a set of plans really kind of changed me going forward. And now what's fun is I'm friends with some of those guys. And that's a real full circle moment to me, is getting in there, chatting with those guys and, you know, being people in the same industry and really learning how cool the guys are and how that is just the gold standard for home improvement television.
So I was in Pennsylvania last week, and the keynote speaker was Kevin O'Connor, the host of the show for the last 20 years. And I got to meet him at the luncheon after spending about 20 minutes speaking to him. And he is the same on TV that he is in person and vice versa. Very nice guy, interested in obviously the skilled trades and wants the industry to continue on and do better. But it was amazing to kind of hear his sort of background and how he got into the industry, which I didn't even realize as the host. He wrote into the show 20 plus years ago with him and his wife. And I think either Tom or Norm, one of them came down to his house and they liked who he was. And somehow they're like, you know, we have an opening for the host. I don't know, like maybe that was the time when Bob left and they made him the host. And I was like, wow, I didn't even know that. I think it was pretty cool.
I know Kevin really well. And he actually, when they had their 40th anniversary party, I was out speaking for the Northeastern Retail Lumber Association, told Kevin I was going to be in town. He said, hey, why don't you and your wife fly in early? You can be my guest. And we were his guest for the party at the TV station for the 40th anniversary party. And that was just a bucket list item for me. So I've known Kevin for a while. And yeah, I remember there was Steve Thomas, I think, that was in there between Bob Vila and him. And so I think Steve was looking to leave. And yeah, Kevin was actually on Ask This Old House as a homeowner. And I think he was doing banking or something, or investment banking at the time. And so absolutely fun to see him. And he's really learned a lot. And he's just such an amazing human. I love the guy. He's been on the show a lot. Just a great guy. I was just a couple months ago, I was in Vegas at the same time with him. So we were at a couple events together and had a great time.
It's funny. It's a small world. And one of my good friends actually grew up next to Bob Vila, I believe up in Boston. He showed me in his old picture of him and Bob Vila. It's just a small world, how everybody, you know, somebody knows somebody who knows somebody. And it's funny that we know sort of the same people, but he's a great guy. I love the show. That's been around for 45 years. What makes a home improvement show? Because obviously you have Around the House Northwest. To keep the audience engaged, what do you need to do to capture their attention, to keep their attention for years?
The crazy part is that that ball is always moving. It's like when you get into Google or whatever else and you're starting to get into like SEO and analytics, it seems like the rules change all the time. I think the beauty of This Old House is that it's been done by a station that invented home improvement television, that invented food cooking channels with Julia Childs and that kind of stuff. So they were just really early to the game. And because that they have to follow that PBS rule of no sponsors, they didn't let the sponsors in to ruin the show. It's harder for them to produce television, but it also insulated them from all the mistakes that TV companies make with advertisers. Because usually what happens at some point is that either the ratings or the money dries up because of a bunch of different things, and the show goes away. And the other thing is with Discovery Channel and the other people that are out there making the big home improvement channels, it seems that they're always chasing the next greatest new thing. So, you know, we went from reality shows to house flip shows, and all of a sudden everything on television was a house flip show. And we've seen that kind of go between TV, and there's always the next greatest thing. And so you see that. And I think that's what's protected This Old House from getting messed with. They've been able to stay kind of that gold standard out there. That's why you look at TV shows and they live for 4 or 5 years tops. You know, there's exceptions out there, but most everybody goes away. I mean, even Mike Holmes and Chip and Joanna Gaines disappeared for a while. And then there's some of the bigger brands out there.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to keep something going for that long and to keep an interest level to your audience, who are also aging out as well. So you need to capture the attention also of the younger generation. I was watching you on one of your shows and you were putting in a fence and you were putting in posts. You were actually using the mud mixer for concrete. I know that pretty well because we carry that. How do you figure out what kind of project you're going to do? Do you discuss that with your team, or that's something you come up with? How does that typically work?
Well, we are the craziest television show in the country because we do 52 episodes a year. So we have a brand new show every single week where you see a season of This Old House, maybe it's going to be 12 or 16 episodes. We do 52, and they're 1 hour shows, not half hour shows. So we are always creating stuff and planning stuff out months in advance, trying to get things set up and ready to go, because we have, you know, 8 or 9 different segments in the show, and it's interviews, it's building stuff, it's that fence. And so there's so many moving parts. That's half the battle, is just getting kind of the parts together so we can create the show and have it different every single week. Even in holiday weeks, we still got to kick a show out.
That's a lot of shows. And I don't go to that extent, but I used to do YouTube stuff and how-tos and setting up the camera and stuff. Obviously, you have a crew to do that, but that's a lot of work, because how many takes is that? So if it's an hour-long show, and let's say you're doing The Fence, how long does that take to shoot? Is that a handful of days?
Try to do that in 1 or 2 days. And so part of it is what we're showing on TV, what we're not showing on TV, and how we capture that. So that can be the tough part, because really, I have the smallest crew in television too. It's me and another guy. It's me and Bradley. And that's what it is. We have another guy that sends out emails and helps us with some scheduling stuff, but we got him for, you know, maybe 12 hours a week tops. And so it's two of us doing this entire show. So not only is he over here shooting, but when he's shooting, he's got to go back and edit the show up, which is really as much as we, you know, that's 50-50 as far as shooting and editing. And then when he's editing, I'm off getting ready for next week. We're the leanest, most published show in television as far as that goes. It's what we do. It's a challenge, yeah. Because, I mean, great example, I built a brick-style wood-fired pizza oven. And it's a 40-hour build, start to finish. And we had 20 hours of content for a 7-minute piece.
How do you even cut that down?
Bradley's got to do it. So he's got to go through it. And, you know, he won't watch it, but he'll kind of block the story out and go, okay, I need to find this piece. And he'll drop that in and tell the story. That's the tough part. And a lot of it, I have to just kind of figure out. Sometimes, you know, I've got cameras here. So sometimes I'll get the project 90% done. And then maybe I'll work over the weekend, get it knocked out. And then Monday morning, we knock it out so we can use it for the next week's show.
I mean, coming up with topics alone and trying to figure that out, do you ever get feedback from the audience and what they're looking for? Or do you just kind of base it upon seasonality? How do you figure that portion out?
Well, we have all these different segments. So like yesterday, I shot, 7 segments for the show. So we probably shot 35 minutes of finished television yesterday. We have a segment in the show called Neighborhood Connection where people ask questions. And so usually we'll take 1 or 2 questions and I'll do specific projects or answer those questions in that. And then, you know, we have what we call our Perform Like a Pro, which is our big project that we do, whether we're building that fence or, you know, installing a skylight or whatever we're doing. That's kind of what we lead out the show with. And then we do interviews, we do new products. We actually do this thing called Let's Test It. I usually try to grab, it's not always this case, but I'll actually jump on Amazon and grab the cheapest knockoff parts that I can find and tools and go test them and see how bad they are.
That makes for good TV.
Yeah. And some of them are horrible. I mean, we did one last week was a pop rivet gun, and it only did one pop rivet, so we couldn't even use it. We had to send it back to Amazon because after one, it broke. And I'm like, okay, well, that's even the worst because we couldn't even get it done.
Well, sometimes you get what you pay for, right?
100% of the time. I mean, sometimes I'm surprised because it works better than I thought. But generally speaking, any of those tools that you look at, if it's a $200 tool and you think you're getting it off Amazon for $25, it's going to be that bad.
Where did it come from, your background? Was there somebody in your family who was in a blue-collar industry, or where did you get your hands-on work? Or was it just you and you decided that you wanted to go this path?
Now, it's interesting. So my grandfather on my dad's side, he worked for Ford Motor Company. I mean, I still have his Model T assembly line tool, hand tools that he's got. He was really involved with my dad. My dad worked in the nuclear industry, nuclear engineer slash physicist kind of guy, worked for the CIA, nuclear counterintelligence, but we worked on cars and did home improvement all the time. And so we had classic cars we restored. We did big building projects around the house, all that stuff. So really, I got pictures of my mom's photo album of me at age 8 with a grinder underneath a Mustang we were restoring, and I was cutting bolts off down there. So it's something that I've done ever since I was a little kid. So it was something that was fun to me.
How important is it to get or introduce kids at a young age to working with their hands? You know, especially you were working with your dad and he was showing you at a really young age. But do you feel the percentage goes up if you're working and using your hands as a young adult or young kid? Does the percentage go up that likelihood maybe you'll work with your hands and go into a trade later on in life?
I think that you're building that eye-hand coordination, and it's just like any sport, you know, somebody that goes in and starts playing, you know, baseball at age 8 and goes into college is going to be so much better at it than if they started at age 14. You know, traditionally, if you can get someone in on it early, I think it's great. And I think it's also good, whether or not they go into the trades or not, I think at that age, we should be teaching those skills. It's life skills. Whether or not you want to go in and be a carpenter, awesome. But I still think by age 10, you should understand how a circular saw works, or 12, and you can do stuff with your hands, use a drill, use some of those things. So I think that should be, in my opinion, that should be something that we should be covering in every school system. And maybe 6th grade, 7th grade, I think we should have those classes back in the schools again. And so we can kind of nurture those kids that don't want to go to college, that really enjoy that. If not, kids that don't want to do it, at least they have some life skills so they can go fix something around their house.
I see a lot of kids come out and they don't know how to read a tape measure or swing a hammer. And those skills that almost, like you said, it was taught in a shop class, it's not there anymore. And I always feel that sometimes that person who has that technical ability, who likes working with their hands, they're not exposed to a shop class, or there's nobody in their family or a family friend who is in the trades. They might just kind of bypass the whole system, go to college, and never actually get into the trades, where if they were exposed in a shop class early on, they might have gone into a different direction.
Yeah, it's funny. I can't tell you how many times I've seen people that went off and got into the business world, didn't enjoy it, struggled, had their college education, and then years later, what are you doing? Oh, I'm building houses because it's really what I enjoy. It's amazing how that works.
I've seen the shift sometimes where, yeah, someone will go to college for a couple of years and say, look, this is not me. I'm not going to spend the time. And obviously, there's a huge investment into the college route and that education. I'm not downplaying it. It's for the right person. I mean, I went to school for 4 years and I was more lost coming out of school than when I was in school. Sometimes they make that switch out of college and then they go to the trades path and they're a lot happier. I've heard those success stories before. And some of them have become entrepreneurial. Some of them have opened up their own shops and they've done really well for themselves. So the opportunities are endless.
No question. And I'll take it a step further and say, you know, it's the big business of a college education. You know, these schools out there are selling kids, hey, you sign up and pay $100,000 and they'll get you your humanities degree so you can go make $42,000 a year and you'll spend the next 30 years paying us back. And you know, here's my thing. And I think college is great for the doctor, for the attorney, for the people that need to have that education for what they do. But I also think that there's a lot of kids being taken advantage of out there. And I would love to see them change the school loan programs, where when you went to go get a student loan, you had to do the math. You had to prove that you were going to actually get a career that was going to pay back that money. No different than if you went and got a car loan or a house loan. Can you imagine if you went and got a house loan and they did it how they do student loans and they're like, oh, cool. Okay, you can pay that back. It's a $2 million house, but I know you're making $42,000 a year. You're good.
The math doesn't really work out.
Why are kids paying $100,000, $120,000 for a college education for something that they have little chance of making it back in that career? Doesn't make sense to me. If they want to go pay for it on their own self, awesome. But to me, that math doesn't work. And there's so many kids that are getting shoved into college that should be in the trades. I mean, it's so sad seeing people out there that have spent all this money, have this massive debt load, and they're off doing something that 95% of what they learned isn't going to help them in what they do each day.
What would you suggest if I am 15, 16, and I know that I like working with my hands, but I don't know what trade, and I really don't know who to go to. What kind of advice would you give someone at that age that kind of knows that they want to work with their hands, but they don't know what to do or where to go?
Kind of two schools of thought. I would take a look at and see what your school district offers. If there is a program, get into a shop, a welding, a woodworking, an auto mechanic. Get something where you're doing something with tools that maybe you can work around with and try it out with. And then two, I would look around your family friend circles. Who do you know? Is it your best friend's dad that's a plumber? Is it your mom's friend that's a HVAC tech? And see if you can kind of hang around and see what they do. If they're tackling a project on a weekend and you're close enough, maybe go out and help them out. Or in the summertime, take an internship, go out and try something out, helping out a family member, and see if there's something you enjoy. Because so many times people get into the trades, they go, oh my gosh, this is so much fun. And the spark is lit and off they go.
Keeping sharp on the skill set in the trades is important. Obviously, there are new techniques and ways to do things. How do you keep improving your skill set in the trades?
You know, it's interesting. And the TV show right now forces me, because every week that I do a new product or we are installing something, I go through and study to make sure I try to make it as accurate as possible. I go through each one of these products and how they recommend things being installed. And then if I have questions, I'll get a hold of the plumber, the electrician, whoever that I know, to say, hey, what about this? And so it really pushes me using these new products to make sure that I'm doing the latest in the techniques and stuff like that, because it's tough. There's many times I'm doing it on the TV, I'm doing this for the first time because it's new, and you just kind of have to figure it out to make it work.
How have you seen the technology change over the course of your career, especially when it comes to power tools or hand tools? What have you seen the evolution over the last couple of decades?
Oh man, it's crazy. I mean, when I first started out, it was corded everything. And then in my mind, Makita came out in the 90s with that actual pretty decent long battery that you could pop in and out of it on the bottom of that. And Makita to me was kind of the first one to really come out with a reliable battery platform. And then it took off from there. And now I've got a couple of corded tools, but pretty much everything is battery power of some kind that I have. And, you know, I think it really changed probably 10 years ago when all of a sudden we didn't see tool companies. Every new battery update would be a new platform. You'd have to go buy tools. Oh, it's the new lithium ion. It's this. And so you're like, oh, I got to get rid of all those dang tools. Awesome. And so now you're seeing companies like DeWalt and Milwaukee and Bosch and all the different ones that you see out there. They can do the battery upgrades without changing the platform. Maybe they'll add another platform, but you know, it's really gotten so much better. And I think what's also good for the tradespeople is that these companies in their competition with each other have really worked on making things more ergonomic and safer for that end user, like the saw stop table saw or drills that are easier on your arm so you have less of an injury to your wrist or your elbow. All these things start to matter. And I think a lot of people, that competition has really helped out between these different companies.
What's important is the safety aspect, the longevity, because you want to be in this game for a long time. And if you can make your job a lot easier with the right technology, then I'm all for it. A case in point, I was in the world of concrete about a year or so ago, and I was watching a robot tie rebar. And obviously you can use a rebar tire to do that. They used to do it manually, but you're bent over and it's a strain on your back, but a robot was literally just tying it. That's a tedious job that can be automated by a robot. But obviously there's a lot of things that you can't automate, but innovations like that really help the industry for some of that day-to-day monotonous stuff that's just backbreaking.
Well, Andrew, look at that mud mixer. Great example. There's nothing more when I'm doing small projects of sitting there with a wheelbarrow and maybe a garden hoe or a shovel trying to mix a bag of quickcrete. You know, it's just, I don't enjoy it. It's messy. It's labor intensive. And when I can sit there, rip a bag open, and 10 seconds later, I got mud coming out the end of it, and I can keep feeding it as long as I want to, and actually pour a slab with bags, now you're talking.
We actually can't keep that on the shelf. That mud mixer is so popular and does such a good job. It's actually great that I saw you actually using it. and you're saying that it's a great product. So products like that help from an efficiency standpoint and a time saver. And that just goes for a lot of different technologies within the industry that are just making things a lot easier for people in the trades.
It is, but it's so funny. We will spend all the time right there, but then we have so many products that go into our homes that are so outdated, like drywall. Can't somebody come up with something better than that dusty, messy, slow process to finish the inside of our walls that'll stop a fire in some cases? I mean, we got to fix some of this other stuff that it's like, really? We're still doing it that way and we can't figure that out? I'd love to see somebody's thoughts on that.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll come out with something over the course of the next X amount of years that somebody will improve on that technology and other technologies as well. It's exciting to see where it's gone. And like you said, over the last decade, we've seen an extreme difference across the board. And all these things that are coming out that just necessarily wasn't there prior, that just making everyone's life a lot easier and keeping people in the trades a lot safer, which is the number one thing on a job site, is making sure that they're safe and then they get home to their loved ones with 10 fingers and 10 toes. So tell me, what's coming down the pipeline for you? You got a lot of projects coming up. What's coming down the pipeline for you on the radio show or even the TV show?
Well, radio show, we're just growing right along right now. I think we're up to about 70, 75 stations right now. It's changing so fast, I can't even keep track of it. But we've got that many radio towers across the U.S. And then the podcast, of course, which is kind of the longer form. And I do that show a little bit different. It's not your typical call-in home improvement show. We do much deeper dives. Like when I had you on there, for instance, you know, we'll do a deep dive on a subject and go for it. But that's going along really well. And the TV show, we're just keeping cranking along. It's summertime, so we're really trying to do outside projects now. Boy, we've got some great stuff coming up. I've got some great new products, from steel roofing to this new ultra heavy duty pocket door frame for doing a solid core pocket door that's bulletproof. It's something, another product that's been really upgraded, so it actually works versus, you know, you put the door in and it's the pocket door frame. So we got a lot of cool stuff there. I'm having a great time doing an outdoor kitchen. I'm kind of finishing that project up. So really, we're bouncing around every single week with different products and projects, trying to find the latest and greatest stuff to talk about, because that's one of the things that I really have fun with, is highlighting those inventors out there that are doing some of this stuff that's really creating new products. And right when they're coming out of the gate, it's fun to talk about them and give them a stage to launch their platform on.
You know, I see the passion behind when you're actually on TV and working, that you're not just the host, you're passionate about what you're doing and what you're building, and you're teaching on top of that. I see that in hearing your voice and seeing you on television, and the things that you're doing are remarkable. And you're reaching a broad audience in so many different locations and making an impact. So I appreciate what you do sort of in the industry.
It's interesting out there, especially with television now, that you can stream stuff across the country. And of course, everything ends up on YouTube. It's all kind of cut up. And that was one of the things when I created the show, is I wanted people to go over to YouTube and be able to go in there. I mean, we've got over, in the last, 15, 16 months of the show, we've got over 400 videos we've created of these segments. And people can go in there and jump on the playlist and take a look and hopefully learn something. And it's fun when we can highlight brand new products that are changing construction, or making things upgraded, or just be safer out there. There's so many different changes in the industry. It's fun to try to stay on top of it. And that way I can show homeowners and contractors in the trades that there's new products coming up.
How do people follow you on social media, on radio? What's the best way to keep on top of all the things that you're working on out there?
You know, we got a ton of different facets out there, but you can head to the website, which is Around the House Online, and that has a lot of stuff there. We've got multiple social media channels for Around the House show or Around the House Northwest, the TV show. But the website's the great one, because that'll send you to all the videos. It'll send you to the radio show, the podcast, and social media over there. So that's kind of our one-stop shop for everything. And it makes it easy, just aroundthehouseonline.com.
Well, Eric, it's been a blast having you here on the show. You're always working on a lot of different things. It's always exciting to see what project that you're working on. So I appreciate you coming and joining us on the podcast.
Man, thanks for the opportunity. I love what you're doing here. It's people like you that are out there that are fighting for people trying to get into the trades and that awareness. We need about 1,000 more of you out there and the school districts and the parents to pay attention to make some changes.
Appreciate it. Thank you to our listeners out there, where our mission is to flip the script on the blue-collar skilled trades and make them cool. Once again, we'll see you on the next episode.
You've been listening to the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades podcast. Sure, nothing wrong with going to college, but there's just as much honor and need for people to be blue-collar workers that are the very backbone of our infrastructure. Thank you for listening to the show. If you enjoyed it, make sure to like, rate, and review. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, follow Andrew Brown on LinkedIn, TikTok, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram, and hit the website at www.andrewbrowntrades.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.